Welcome to Let's Talk Ed. Zahi, we have been talking about non-traditional students, joined by our good friend Eric Painter, who has a great story of his own as a non-traditional student, as a veteran. And today, we're going to do something that we've done before with some other topics. So we are going to wave our magic wand. We're going to take away all issues of cost and personnel and any barriers that we might
you
have.
You wish, Christopher.
Yes, that's why it's a magic wand. You know, after we cash in our Powerball and Mega Millions winnings, we will be able to start our own college and do this. But let's say we're going to wave that magic wand and we want to do everything we can to help non-traditional students. And being very real for a moment, this is something incredibly important for two-year colleges, especially because we are seeing that drought of traditional age students take hold. So now as we're thinking about recruiting, we're thinking about how do we bring in non-traditional students? So with all of that said, gentlemen, what do you wish for when you wave that magic wand?
Eric.
Zahi told me I couldn't talk about scheduling our cohorts since we already did that. Watch the previous episode. Wait. Watch this one, then go watch that one. But I just thought of one. This is one that I had that worked really well for me, and I think other traditional students were. Zahi was the dean of the campus when I was going to college the 15th time. I have 8 years of college and 1 2-year degree, so I don't know that my story's that good. I'm definitely not the most efficient college taker. But he had an open door, and as a student, I felt I always had a voice in what happened on that campus and within that program and within that college on a larger basis, because I could walk in and I could talk to the dean. I could talk to my teachers. I could talk to whoever I wanted, generally speaking. At the time, while I ultimately have some issues with our school president, but our school president was introduced himself as Will, right? And that's how he introduced himself. And he was very open to talking to you. I was in a veterans club, and he always was very supportive and always put in. He actually played in the cover band for our veterans graduation ceremony when I graduated. So from top to bottom, I felt like I could walk into just about any office in that school and have a voice and feel like I was heard. It wasn't just put a piece of paper in a Dropbox somewhere and somebody was going to throw it away later without reading it. I had a voice, and if I could do it my way, every student would have that opportunity. They'd have a connection with not just their teachers, but with their school administration.
I think a student having a voice is a must. And I'm not saying it to pander. I'm saying it because, you know, it's like in instruction. We tell people that we need to focus on student learning outcomes. Student learning outcomes is what? It's the assessment for learning, which means it's to get information from the student to the teacher so we can enhance our skills, our technology, our curriculum to support the growth of that student. So I'm with you. Communication is wonderful. But then sometimes it's the channel of communication that can be problematic. And speaking of communication, what does Chris think about communication as if, you know, a magic wand solution?
Yeah, you know, finding ways to communicate with students is a huge thing. So, you know, what Eric just talked about really kind of inspired me and made me think about some of the things that I've run into. And Zahi, this is something that, again, off air, we talked about a little bit, and the idea of me
model as, trains.
No. The idea of me as a staffer
model train club.
Oh, that would be fantastic. I know of at least two people at my college that would be into that. But you know, the idea that as administrators who aren't necessarily seeing students on a day-to-day basis like faculty members are, we still can have a profound impact on students as we talk to them. And, you know, there are a number of students that, you know, more than just know of me, they know me. Yeah. They've had an opportunity to talk to me at some point. And, you know, while they aren't necessarily coming to my office all the time, they know that when they need something, they can come to me. So our nursing program, they're working on a project, and they needed some really fancy way to show some of the data that they were doing. And they asked, hey, Chris, can you help with that? Because we know that's in your skill set. So, you know, extending that open door policy, giving that voice, I think is really important. And, you know, it goes without saying that as administrators, as employees of a college, we should be cheerleaders for our students. And that really needs to be authentic. We really need to do what we can to make sure we're providing an easy path to success for our students. I'm not saying let's make our classes easy, let's turn down the rigor or anything like that, but let's do everything we can to try and remove barriers all along the way. So let's make sure the support services are there, especially when we're talking about non-traditional students. Let's say, you know, hey, maybe we don't close the library when we shut down our offices. Maybe we make sure we have advising or financial aid or something like that available at the very least one night a week where somebody can come in during off hours, so to speak, and be able to engage with those people.
I cannot tell you how much I agree with all of what you said, from food service to library to the support services. It's interesting you bring this up, because an element of what you said requires us to stop and think about our student not as a commodity, rather as a customer. Customer not of services, but customer of opportunity. And we forget those things. So I'm going to throw one more thing. What about daycare? What about school jobs? And I'm not talking the menial jobs. I'm talking meaningful jobs for those students where we just don't have tasks, where we have projects. And what if we turned every class, including composition, including music, including the arts, including philosophy, into project-based learning? Because if you lower the rigor, and this is where I differ a little bit with what you said, you need to enhance the rigor. Because if you lower the rigor, people are going to be, well, is it worth my money? I can pass it with my eyes closed. I don't. What's an associate degree? What's a bachelor's degree, right? But if we enhance the rigor and we create opportunities for people to be immersed and live the learning, wouldn't that help the student and make it attractive? What do you think about my magic wand waving?
Well, for clarity, Sahi, I'm not in favor of lowering the rigor either. I just want to make sure those barriers can be reduced along the way.
Fair. Good point.
I think project-based is great for a certain student and a certain program. We do some project-based within Hartnell, and obviously we've worked, Zahi and I have worked on programs like the Bridge Program, where project-based was very much at the heart of what we did. However, within welding, sometimes it's just repetition. You know, it's that person standing there in basketball, putting those free throws up over and over. It's building muscle memory and stuff like that. That doesn't always lend itself to just a project, because as any welder will tell you, very few people weld from 9 to 5. They weld for probably 15 minutes of the day, even though they're a professional welder, because the project has so many other things that aren't welding that are part of it. And so you have, at least within my discipline, there has to be a good mix of those two things. But as a non-traditional student, I learn best with projects, where you give me a project, you say, you have to get from A to B, and I have to think my way through that. So I very much agree, for my own personal learning, that's the way to go. But I would be hesitant to say that's a blanket option across everything.
So Zahi, one of the things I want to ask you about, because we've talked about private for-profits many times, and you see them advertising all the time, credit for prior learning, you know, and the importance of that. And it's very compelling when you are a non-traditional student. And I'm not having to do a 100 level class now. What are your thoughts about credit for prior learning?
Actually, I like it. And one of the folks that was one of my guinea pigs is called Eric Painter, where we used a lot of his experience toward credit. Why? Because learning doesn't only take place within the confines of our credit and our hours. Now, if it is just a money grab and to attract the student, we're not doing them a favor. But if it is building on their, on the momentum of their learning and allowing them to accelerate, to get to the meat of what's going to change their life, I am all for it. And I think, you know, yes, the for-profit institutions have used it quite effectively, including in their communication. But candidly, it's always been there for the student in form of, you know, bring me a portfolio or a challenge exam. And we've hidden it very often because we wanted the student to take the class and pay us the tuition. In reality, how good are we doing by the student and for the student? Did I answer your question? Do you agree with me? What do you think, folks?
Yeah, no, I agree with you 100%. You know, we can't get so embedded in the idea that we're the only ones that know how to teach, you know, especially the lower level classes. And, you know, that's great that you've had this life experience. We're just going to completely discount that because, you know, you didn't take it with us. You didn't do it with us. And I don't think we can be doing anything like that. So we have been talking about what we would do to wave our magic wand and help out non-traditional students in this episode of Let's Talk Ed. If you enjoy us, be sure and ring the bell down below and like this video and please comment because all of that helps us get into the ears and eyes of other like-minded individuals. And you can, of course, find Let's Talk Ed on all of your favorite podcasting platforms as well. So for Eric Painter and Dr. Zahi Atala, I'm Chris Fort. We'll see you next time right here on Let's Talk Ed.